It's okay. A year and a half ago, I planted a lemon tree beside my house. I did it for my husband, Chris, for his birthday. Now, I am a dangerous amateur gardener. But I love this tree. And when you plant a baby tree, I'm learning, Buck would know the best because he's a landscape architect. I'm looking right at him. But when you plant a baby tree, if you want it to thrive, you have to really look at it and pay attention to it. So I watched this tree grow and it looked good, but late in the summer, it got this branch that grew out to the side, and it was really long and strong. And as the summer ended and the fall began, the lemons took shape on it, and it weighed the tree down, and the tree started to lean like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Now, I know that I'm a dangerous amateur gardener, so I found a source of information. There is a good gardening store about 10 minutes away from my house. I've met the manager there. His name is Joel, and he likes to laugh at me. I ask him stupid questions, I guess. So I went in and I asked Joel about this branch that was coming out of the tree. And it had this beautiful fruit on it. And Joel said, rather abruptly, "Cut it off, Kate." I said, "Cut it off? It's got this great big looking juicy fruit growing on the end." "Cut it off, Kate. If you cut it off, the energy that is going out into that branch will come back into the trunk of the tree. You can straighten it up with some stakes and it will grow upwards, not outwards." So against my best instincts, I got my clippers and I lopped off that branch. And sure enough, with some assistance, the tree straightened up and started to reach upwards. And then the lemons started ripening. By the way, for those of you who know about lemon trees, this is a Meyer lemon tree. And they can be big. And I was so excited. Every morning after my prayers, I would rush outside to look and see if there was a lemon that was yellow enough for me to pick. Sometimes I cheated and picked them when they were still a little green around the edges. But I was very proud of this fruit, and I would cut up every lemon and make lemon water. But what happened was that I wasn't looking at the tree anymore because I was so distracted by the beauty of the fruit. Well, last week, my mother-in-law came. Now, she's an artist. Artists know how to look at things. I wanted to show her my tree, and sure enough, we went out there, and she turned over a leaf, and underneath was all this black sticky stuff with white little eggs. I was ashamed because I hadn't been looking. I was so proud of the fruit, I stopped looking at the tree. So we cut off some of the leaves and I put them in a Ziploc bag and I went back to Joel. Joel laughed again at me and said, "Oh, you've got an infestation. Mites. Spray the tree with a lot of water and then take this rough cloth and you need to wipe off the underside of every leaf." So I found myself sitting on the ground just a couple days ago, wiping off every leaf of this little tree. And by God's good grace, I forgot my cell phone. So I was sitting out there with the quiet, wiping the leaves, and I really started looking again. I noticed the dew that gathers on the leaves, and I saw there are these tiny little, almost transparent frogs that live on the leaves of this tree. They didn't much like me flipping their leaves over and wiping, but they hung in there. Advent. This is the first Sunday of Advent. Advent means coming. Always on the first Sunday of Advent, we light the first of four candles in a circle to signify the light entering the darkness. As our days grow darker, our light will slowly increase. And on this first Sunday of Advent, Jesus talks about the end of time. He describes how things will begin to unravel. That Christ will come again. And the sun and the moon and the stars will all begin to act chaotic, and things will get frightening. And he says this strange thing to the disciples. He says, "This generation will not pass away until you have seen all these things." And that has never made sense to so many scholars because, well, we've seen many generations pass away and the end of time has not yet happened. So I'll give you my theory of time. And it is biblical in some ways, but it's also kind of my theory. In the ancient Greek of the New Testament, there are two words for time, not one. There is chronos, which is chronological time that goes in one direction from past to present to future. It is the time that we human beings exist in with our limited brains and our limited minds. And then there is kairos time. God's time, time that exists in eternity and the present moment. And like a cross, chronos time goes horizontally, whereas kairos time cuts down vertically through the present moment, which is why in the architecture of this church you see the chronos part of the cross and the kairos part of the cross. And at the heart of the intersection of those two kinds of time sits our altar, because we believe that in the Holy Eucharist, time is transcended, and we are present with Jesus at the Last Supper, with everyone who has had the Eucharist for generations past, with the present moment and each other, and with all the generations that are to come. And so maybe, and this is Kate's theory, maybe the disciples, when they died, they saw the coming of Christ. And then when we die, we will see the coming of Christ. And when it is the end, perhaps it is the end at some point that we do not understand, and that moment is one moment, transcending time. But whenever this end takes place, Jesus tells us how to be ready. And when he's describing how we can be ready, because our readiness is of vital importance, Jesus talks about a tree. He doesn't talk about a lemon tree. I guess they didn't have Meyer lemons back in Israel then. Instead, he talks about a fig tree. But he tells them just what I'm learning now. If you know the fig tree, you've learned how to watch it. And when the summer comes and the leaves begin to mature, you know that its time is coming and that its fruit will ripen. In the same way, you are to watch your world. You are to pay attention. In fact, it is the quality of your attention, more than anything else, that will save you. You are to look on the underside of your lives, into your minds, and you are to wipe away all of that dark, sticky stuff, the worry, the anxiety, the things that pull you away from the present moment, the politics, the hyperactivity. You are to work at cleaning your mind. The word redemption means to wash away. You are to wipe away your worries. And believe me, all of you have them. This earth is designed, the darkness is designed to stick to you and to pull you away from the light. Just take your cell phone. It is designed to keep you always addicted, always looking, always wondering if you have enough likes, if you've returned your email, if you're doing the right thing. Alert, look at your memories from 5 years ago. Alert, you missed an email. Alert, you've got a bill. And all of that sticky temptation pulls you into your busyness. And there is nothing that keeps us asleep more than our busyness. We are like hamsters running on a wheel that goes around and around and around, and whole years pass. And we're half asleep. Robert was a very busy, very successful, very active man who loved to hike and jog, who loved his family and was very grateful for his life. It was going well. When one evening, coming home from work, he was hit by a drunk driver. His car was totaled. And he woke up in the ICU. The first thing that he saw was the face of his pastor praying for him. And then he blacked out again. Woke up to see a kind-looking nurse changing his IV bag. Blacked out again. Finally awoke, and his family was around him. They told him he was going to survive, but he had lost his leg right above the knee. He would never walk in a normal way again. Robert was overcome by dark clouds of self-pity, of what I like to call the what-ifs. What if I had left work early? What if I had left work late? What if I had gone a different way? What if, what if, what if, what if? Why did this happen to me? And all the worries that take place in our minds whenever we go through hardship. But Robert had time to lie in bed and think. And he decided he was just going to wipe away all that stuff. I'm here. I'm alive, he said to himself. I am not going to go there anymore to dwell in the past and all the things that could have been. I'm going to figure out how to be right here and how to be awake and alert. So he decided that every time a nurse walked into his room, he was going to ask her about her life or his life, about family, about what they wanted him to pray for. And he started working hard at physical therapy. He made goals for himself. He gave thanks for every little strength he had. And gradually, he learned to walk with a prosthetic limb. He began to hike again. And he began to realize that in the cutting off of his leg, he had channeled his energy into finding God and being present. And he was grateful. Do not let yourself be caught up in despair or worry, Jesus says. Do not be dragged down by drunkenness or dissipation. Wipe it off. And when the Son of Man comes, Jesus tells us what to do. He tells us, you would think we should fall down on our knees and say, oh, I'm so sorry for all the things I've done wrong. Lord, help me. But no. Jesus tells us to do something that my grandmother used to tell me to do. My grandmother was such a wonderful grandmother. She taught me so much. She taught me about history, about geography. She taught me about etiquette. And one thing she said that I'll never forget is when you are in a room and another human being walks into that room, you stand up. You get up from the table. You get up from the sofa. You get up from your bed because another living soul has walked into the room. Stand up and look at them. Say to them, welcome. Jesus says, when Christ comes again, stand up. Raise up your head. Lift up your chin and look. Pay attention. Be looking at everything in the world, the seasons that change, the good things that happen, the bad things that happen. Pay attention. So that when I come, you are awake and not living in the past or the future, in what could have been or what will be. Wake up, be alive. Live, stand, look for me. I am coming for you, and I want you to be ready. I want to bring you home. Amen.